Welcome to the Purposefully Human Radio Hour, where we have conversations about creating a more human world. I'm Neil Woodson, and with me is my co-host, Jerry Seifert, and we're really happy that you're joining us today. And we have a great guest. Her name's Lisa Crimes. But before we get to Lisa, Jerry, what's going on in your world? What's happening out west?
Oh, well, first of all, the Seattle Seahawks, you may have heard, won the Super Bowl.
Who? What?
I know, I know. Well, that's kind of the
Stop
way they
talking.
reacted here.
Right, yeah.
But it's been quite an exciting week since. But you know, it's also a season of holidays and observances. You know, the Olympics are on. We had Valentine's Day. Today's President's Day. And tomorrow, there are three observances on one day. So most of the world will be observing something tomorrow. It's Mardi Gras, it's Lunar New Year, and it's also the first night of Ramadan. So we have, in a very compact stretch of time, a lot of significant human observances going on. And, you know, that's just, to me, that's just so cool because, you know, what better to celebrate humanity than to have a holiday, spend time with your friends and neighbors and loved ones, enjoy or observe in whatever way you find appropriate.
Well, on my side of the world, and this probably isn't that big a thing, but last week was the end of the Walk for Peace. Of the Buddhist monks
That's right.
who had walked 2,300 miles from Fort Worth, Texas to Washington, D.C. And they even extended their trip and went to the State House in Annapolis, the Maryland State House. They
Nice.
were invited by Wes Moore, the governor, to come out there, and they happily did that. But I just found that Walk for Peace just really inspiring and something that it brightened my morning. Every morning I'd get up and see a little blurb about where they were, what they were doing, with a little video of walking through some town, being escorted by all kinds of, you know, police officers and things, but just such a peaceful thing. You know, there were no violence involved. Nobody got, as far as I know, there were no, like, you know, angry people throwing things at them or anything. And
Yeah, and
lots of
through some brutal
flowers.
winter weather, no less.
Exactly. But they, you know, they just go through it,
They
and
just go
it's
on.
amazing. It was very, very inspiring.
And
that's a very good thing.
speaking of brutal winter weather, spring is around the corner. So I've noticed some early flowering bulbs and things, even here in Seattle. So,
well, they can't do that here. We've still got snow cover,
yeah.
so. No
Well, you
bulbs.
had some very brutal weather there.
No bulbs. This is the longest time in my memory of having snow on the ground. Three
Yikes.
solid weeks. So, anyway, before we meet our guest, I just want to mention that this program comes to you from the Purposeful Human Community. It's a group committed to giving people a voice in creating a more human world with more humane organizations. You can find out more at purposefullyhuman.com or on LinkedIn by searching for Purposefully Human. So now, without further ado, let's talk about our guest. Today, we have with us Lisa Crimes. Lisa is a fractional executive with over 25 years of strategic leadership and healthcare experience who partners with clients to create measurable, more human-centered improvements. She's also a strategic advisor and a HitLab Innovation Fellow who's well-versed in product management, business development, marketing strategy, and customer experience. Overall, Lisa is an incurably curious troublemaker who stirs things up to make positive change. Lisa, welcome to the Purposefully Human Radio Hour.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
How are things in lovely? You're in Atlanta, is that correct?
I am in Atlanta. They're beautifully warm and beautiful. Feels like a spring day today.
Wow, I don't know what that's like. Actually, we haven't had, we've had maybe in 3 weeks, we've had 3 or 4 days of sunshine. It's all been pretty gloomy and snow covered here. So I want to start out by asking you, first of all, I don't know. I know you and Jerry go way back, but you and I don't. And I really want to know a little bit more about what you do, what's the work you're doing, what projects you're working on, what kind of things are sparking your brain at the moment. Just tell us a little bit more about Lisa.
Well, the last I feel like I have to go back a little bit to go forward, but I left my last really big enterprise role back in 2018 and took some time to explore what I wanted to do next and to take some time for me. It was an important transition in my career. Pretty sure I wanted to be working for startups and be in the startup space. So I needed to kind of, adjust a little bit. So I made that transition and started working for one startup in particular, and then that turned into more of a fractional type of approach and working as a chief product officer, growth officer, strategy officer, a little bit of chief, I don't know, window washer,
Chief
depending
cook and
on,
bottle
but
washer.
yeah, a little bit of everything that needed to be done, but that's where I thrive and what I enjoy doing. So, the last 5 or 6 years, I've been working with a number of different startups. It's one of the ways I got involved with HitLab, who is in the digital health space. Most of the work I do has been with healthcare or health tech companies. That's really where my passion lies, is working in healthcare. But I've done some things outside of healthcare, but they're still tech centric or customer experience centric or somewhere along those lines. This last year, I've joined a friend who has a marketing and advertising agency, and I've been doing most of my work with him as COO and still supporting clients and strategy, and really enjoying the work we get to do in healthcare tech as well.
So what's the relationship with you and Jerry? I know you guys have gone back. Jerry, how did you meet Lisa?
Oh gosh, it is a long time ago, although I've aged less complimentarily than Lisa has, I have to say.
Less gracefully, shall you say?
I think Lisa has little ones in her orbit that help her stay young, and they're really cute.
My two favorite little humans.
Yep, your two favorite little humans. How old are they now?
They're 6 and 8, my grandchildren.
6 and 8. Yeah, they're really sharp. Funny too. We were introduced by a mutual business acquaintance. Oh, Lisa, dare I say, 30 years ago.
At least 25, right?
Yeah, I think it was in that somewhere in there. And have done a variety of things together since. One of the roles Lisa described, we worked on together, a couple of them actually. I've just admired a couple of things about Lisa in particular. One is, and I'd love to hear you comment on this at some point, how you're able to dwell in the house of technology as effectively as you do while actually expanding your humanity. A lot of people go into tech and it sort of guides their footsteps. And they become less sensitive to the human side of things, my opinion. You seem to have a framework or a toolkit or what have you that takes in the opposite direction, which is just so wonderful, but it's also unusual. So
So share that to that toolkit with us, Lisa. What
Yeah,
how
I'm curious to hear how you do
do you
it.
yeah, how do you I mean, it seems, and it's not just true in tech, it's in business, it's in so many things where people just seem to get swallowed up into forgetting that there's a human on the side of just about every single problem that we have. There's a human on the other end of it. But we get swallowed up in whether it's finances, or we get swallowed up in even in education, or more specifically in tech, people get swallowed up in the stuff and in the non-human part of it, and forgetting about the human part. So how do you what do you do to kind of stay away from that, or to change that?
I don't know if there's a particular toolkit. I mean, I would definitely say that I'm intentional myself and grounded, or work to be grounded, I should say, and taking care of myself. But across my career the last 30 years, one of the things that as I learned more and grew more in my leadership roles, I definitely always pointed out that the common theme is that we have people, humans behind it all, and that's who we need to be taking care of. So I try to see the I don't know, just the what's the like in the Buddhist saying, namaste, where you're greeting the other person, and just seeing who I always take that phrase as like seeing the divine in you, but seeing you as a person, basically. So I just try to see the other person as a person, and that just it comes through in, I guess, the work that I do, but I don't know if there's a particular toolkit.
You're sounding very Quaker there. The old Quaker idea of seeing the divine spark in everyone.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, it's funny you because I'm looking at your the bio that I did a minute ago, and product management, business development, marketing strategy. The only one of those that leans human is customer experience, but you've been able to infuse it into everything else. And I really think it's interesting and wonder how do you manage to walk into those rooms in a meeting where everyone's talking about, a marketing strategy and be able to move everyone in that room to remember that, whoa, this is about the people we're, about the people, not about, the strategy is one thing, but the strategy is about people. And I'm curious, what do you do in that world?
I often use the example in product management that those skills have carried with me no matter what I do. And a lot of what we do in product management in the tech space is, you would identify a business opportunity, right? But what is that business opportunity? It's usually solving a problem. For me, many of those were in healthcare technology. So who's the in person that we're solving for, right? The consumer, the patient, the mother, the father, the child that needs a drug or needs a treatment or needs a, who are we actually solving for? Even if it's, I did a lot of work in the revenue cycle space in healthcare. Even though you're talking about the financial side, there's still a person behind that received care that, so always kind of just connecting, and that connection, then allows you to really think about who you're building a product for, right? You may be building a product for in like B2B in business, but they're still servicing the end customer, and just carrying that theme throughout, from the idea all the way literally from ideation, creating the product, to building the product, to delivering the product, launching it to market, to servicing it, all those different things, that it's that experience in learning to do all of that probably even took me down the path of customer experience, because I'm like, oh, what do you mean? I've always been doing customer experience. We think about the people behind it, who's using the products, who are they trying to service? So I feel like a lot of it comes from just making that connection early on.
It's really interesting because to me that medicine is one of those fields, or healthcare is one of those fields that has this irony that runs through it. And the irony is that the whole gig is about people. Everything in it is about people. But what do they
Everything.
teach every doctor?
Yeah.
Don't get emotionally involved, right?
Yep.
And I have a friend who's a nurse and works in like a cancer ward. And we talked about it one day, and she said, it's as much as they tell you that, it's impossible. You can't not get emotionally involved. You
Yep.
just do.
Yep.
And, well, she put a caveat on that. She said, there are a few people, but they're usually just jerks.
They
She used a
exist
different word. I
everywhere.
won't say that word. She used a different kind of word, but she, it's difficult. And I just find it a supreme irony, that it's a field that is totally about people, but yet they try to beat that out of you. And I mean, do you find that? Do you see that?
I do see it occasionally, but I think I may, but maybe it's just my own desire to always bring it back in. It makes me think of a project actually that I worked on with Jerry that was focusing on call centers for a health plan, right? A payer. So you would think that, can be very transactional, but we helped to bring the humanity back into it by saying, let's listen to these calls. Let's understand what's going on. Let's think as a call, as someone that's a call center representative. Take the time to ask the patient how they're doing. If they just told you they lost a child, or they're seeking help for an addiction, or I mean, we heard lots of amazing stories just listening. But acknowledge the person first. Don't they're calling for a transaction, but that doesn't mean you can't see them and recognize them and acknowledge what they're going through before you move on. And that is, I mean, that's huge. So not everybody's there. A lot of people don't want that. They the companies want them to be more transactional, but the ones that get it realize you've got to recognize the person that you're talking to.
Yeah, you got to cut. The interaction can be a transaction, but a person can't be a transaction.
That's
That's
right. That's well said.
So this kind of leads me to a question. The name of this is the Purposefully Human Radio Hour. We're Jerry and I are have a certain commitment to the Purposefully Human group, the community, and I'm curious when you saw that those two words, purposefully human. And I'm sure you've heard Jerry and I talk about it. And Jerry tends to wax poetic about it. How would you define purposefully human for you? And what does it mean for you? Is it, or do you have anything? I know Jerry and I both kind of have our own spin on it, but I'm going to put you on the spot and say, what's your spin on being purposefully human? And how does that fit with everything we've just talked about?
I think it aligns really nicely. So my favorite part about purposefully human is purpose. Fully human, and when I say it, I have to say it that way too. But so it just starts with that. But it means being purposefully human because you're choosing presence and dignity and intention. Especially in the world of when it's fast and messy and high stakes, right? And I think that's how we keep technology and business and our own ambition more in the service of people, not the other way around.
It's funny that you said it that way because we actually do. You don't see it on the screen right now with our behind us, where but the actual name of the group is Purposefully Human. We capitalize the F because
I love that.
it's about being purposeful, but also being fully human. And to me, that's a pretty powerful thing.
I agree. I love that.
So What you've kind of said it already to a degree, but what would you say is the problem in the world that we're trying to solve for? What, why is this necessary? Why are we having this conversation? to me, we shouldn't have to have this conversation, but we do. We're having it, and we even have a group called Purposefully Human. Why, in your estimation?
I think we can for I think it's just easy to forget in business that there's even if you're running a business, you may even be thinking about the people behind it, but I don't think we always just recognize and think with empathy about what's going on in their lives. And it's kind of the same. We've all been driving down the road and someone cuts you off or honks at you, whatever. And it's easy to just go, ah, what's the matter with that jerk? Or why are whatever, to let that spew. But you could also choose to go, I wonder what's going on in their lives today, right? Or I wonder who you have no idea where they just came from, what they may be experiencing. Maybe it's some of the own stuff in my own life, with family members that have had some health issues, just per some of those personal challenges that I've seen them go through, that I also learned to start talking about those things in business, because I don't think I need to be embarrassed about a family member that has a mental health issue or crisis. And by talking about those things, it's allowed me to see other people as humans too, and that they could definitely be experiencing those things. And so I don't say we need to all go around every single conversation and bring this kind of stuff up. Or certainly business could get extra messy if we were all constantly just like throwing out all of our personal challenges all the time. But to stop and understand that other people do have some challenge, everybody has stuff. So whether it's a complete stranger that cuts you off or somebody that works with you, just realizing, you don't know the path that they're walking, and maybe we just give them a little bit of grace to have a better day or something.
That's a
Yeah,
powerful word, grace.
Which word is that?
Grace.
Oh, to
You
have
know,
grace.
I think that speaks directly to what Lisa's sharing with us, is that people, because they're compensated for their expertise, or they're given impossible deadlines, they have more things to think about than ever, somehow that gets edged out.
Why is that? Why do you think it gets edged out?
I was just going to ask Lisa why she thought it gets edged out.
Here you go. Okay. We're on this brain, we're mind melding, Jerry, I think.
Well, no, well, are you asking me,
No,
Neil?
well, either one of you or both of you. Why
I'll tell you
is
my
it? Go
thoughts on it.
ahead.
Ahead. Yeah, so I think we're just not a lit, like, especially in business, we've always separated the two. It's like, no, this is you're gonna put your business hat on when you walk in the door, and you're not gonna, you set your baggage aside. And to a degree, we all have to do that, right? You have to be able to compartmentalize. You have to be able to focus where you need to focus. And that's not exactly what I'm talking about. I think it's just we've been so conditioned in business to never bring in even human feelings into situations at times,
Right.
that we've kind of lost that muscle. Maybe we've just lost the muscle to stop and pause. And I was sharing with some younger colleagues recently, and about what it used to be like when you first kicked off the meeting. Everybody knows the How was your weekend? How was the weather? How are those things? But you know, I had a coach years ago, and who knows, it's probably Jerry that said, you shouldn't just jump into business all the time. It's okay to pause. Or the really smart consultants that I know, I got this one from Jerry, is show up a few minutes early. Use that time to connect. Understand the people you're talking to. You know, you do some of those things to connect with the person on the other side before you jump into business.
Well, this is exactly what you were talking about a minute ago. And you
Yeah.
brought up something that a concept I've taught dozens and dozens and dozens of customer service classes. And I always get asked the question, how do you deal with people that are jerks? I say, well, the biggest thing you can do is consider the iceberg. I mean, well, what's the iceberg? I say, well, all you see of people is 10%.
Yep.
The other 90% is in the iceberg. And that's
Yep.
family problems, crabgrass problems,
Yeah.
sink problems, toilet overflow problems, all of that stuff is in that 90%.
Yep.
And stuff, people bring stuff with them, And to your point, you sit down as a consultant, you talk to people, and you get there a little early and sit down and say, look, I want to get to know you. I want to know what's in that iceberg, because
Yeah.
that's going to impact everything that we do. It's going to impact how we move forward
You know,
and help me understand what. How to move and maneuver, et cetera. Not in a selfish way, but in a way that helps me to move things forward for you or with you.
it reminds me of years ago on a you know, it was a company that I was working for, but we were having an off-site. It was a frustrating morning. It was raining. It was I was going to a location I'd never been to. I was frustrated, and I was just walking in not in a good space. And the woman that I talked to that was checking us in, she was like, can we just stop a second? How are you? And she didn't know me. She didn't know me, and she would not let me like continue. Like she literally hit the reset. It was like, no, I'm gonna kind of bring you into why you're here. And I think she even gave me a hug or something. But that interaction just still always stands out, because this woman who didn't know me, it turns out she used to be a flight attendant. She's like, I've just met a lot of people over the years, and had to deal with a lot of different situations, and I don't see why, we can't break this for you before you have to then go into your meeting. So anyway, it just really stood out as someone that wanted to make a different experience and change an interaction with somebody
Well,
that
but then you're
could
just being
have been,
human, but you made it
it could
human.
have been bad.
Yeah, but you make it human that way, right? I years ago I had a I used to work in hotel world, and I worked on the event side of the hotel world, in the convention side or convention end of things. And we had this group came in, and the woman who was leading the group, she had been really nice over the phone and in the planning and all of that stuff. And then when she got on site, she was a tyrant. And she was, I mean, she was just like 180 degrees what we thought. And she was kind of, I don't want to say she was abusing my team, but she was making their life difficult. And so finally, during one of the places where she was just by herself and the group was going and things were happening, I sat down and I said, "Can I ask you a question? Is there something bothering you? Because you don't seem to be in character." And she said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, for 3 weeks we've been talking together over the phone, and you're just like a very different person here." And she finally said, she looked at me, and she said, "Do you have children?" I said, "Yes." "Do you have a daughter?" I said, "Yes." She said, "I'm having trouble with my daughter." And we had a chat about her daughter.
Oh, I
And I
love
told
that.
her, I said, "I tell you what, I will man this station for you if you will just go out on the balcony." There's a balcony outside. "So go out on the balcony and call your daughter." And she went out, and I saw her pacing back and forth, and she's talking to her daughter, and she comes back in, and you can tell she's kind of wiping her eyes and all that. And she sat down, and she said, "That made all the difference in the world." And from that moment on, she was a different person. She was back to that person.
Well, that's so awesome. That is a perfect example.
Yeah, that's that moment of grace that Lisa was talking about. You were able to offer that to another human. What I was going to add when you asked the question was I think modernity has brought a performance imperative to the workplace. So there's this unending drive to squeeze value out of every dollar, every meeting minute, and what have you. So, there's a messaging that I think gets shared that it's actually inadvisable to be human at work. It takes a little bit of reorienting the mind and the soul to do the things that Lisa is suggesting. Connect first, act out of grace, do what you did, Neil, because first of all, it's just the right thing. But second, it's inevitably going to help with something later. And I'll remember a quick story about that Lisa's probably forgotten. First time we were working on this project, and I happened to be there in her office, and she said, "Oh, and you're invited to join us tonight." And I said, "Join you and who doing what?" "It's Thursday night, so we're going out for margaritas." And I had my work hat on, and I said, "Oh, and what's the topic?" And she said, "There's no topic. We're just going out to have margaritas. And if it's okay with you," she's talking to me now, "I just assume that we not talk about work." And thank you, by the way. Got the point. And the thing is, the relationships that were formed in that context later on ended up being invaluable. And Lisa will remember some of the people that I'm referring to, but later, when it was like, "Hey, can you do me a favor?" "Oh, sure. We're all friends." People in other departments. That was what was amazing about it, Lisa, is people in other departments, people in other functions, people that were not in your personal sphere of influence.
That's
And
right.
you would just had this charm about having this margarita night, and it formed a band of humans that showed up for each other, and helped each other. And that's another one of those opportunities to show grace. But I think too many people in the modern workplace, they don't take that risk. It was nominally among work people. So, Lisa, I think you submitted it for expenses. But you took that personal risk and it paid off. It paid off. And I'll always remember that the evenings out with the team because, it was just so vital. And it was an organization. I think I can say this because we haven't said who we're talking about. I can say this in the open air. It was pretty siloed. I mean, working to your left and right was unusual. Let's just put it that way.
I
I
think,
think.
Jerry, you've used, and we've certain themes have been jumping out. Jerry used the word risk. And other things that we've been talking about seem to suggest fear. And I'm always curious, what is it in workplaces? What is it that makes people, first of all, I don't want to take a risk, or take that risk? And I'm assuming that risk is the risk of being vulnerable, maybe. And then what's the fear? What's the fear that's there? And I see it all the time. This fear of, as I would get up and do talks, and I would do a talk about the iceberg, for example. And then I'd have a manager come up afterwards and go, that's really inappropriate for the office. I'm like, what are you talking about? That, what? And really what it came down to, he was just afraid. He was afraid, to be vulnerable, to do all that, and that's not what we do here. Well, maybe that's the problem. But what do you think? What do you think the fear is? What is the fear that's out there? Anybody?
My first thought was like yours. It's being vulnerable. It's letting, you know, it's I think people are in many cases just afraid to even say what they think. You know, that same company, I was there for a number of years, so that it's probably why I have so many stories. I think about some of the customer experience work that we did with customers, and one project in particular was one of the early ones where we asked the customers to stand on either side of the room, whether or not they voted or agreed or disagreed. So basically, they were voting with their feet. Do you believe the company takes care of its customers? Do you believe, you know, so we ask these questions that, and this is a room of technical people. These were very highly technical, a lot of introverted people. They were used to going to their user group conferences, sitting in a seat, being, you know, death by PowerPoint, just being shown PowerPoint the whole time. And here I am doing something completely different than they've ever heard. And I mean, I had the deer in the headlight looks at first, but then all of a sudden, you know, it's kind of like that, the lessons of leadership. If you've ever seen that YouTube video, it's like the first person makes a move and then the second. And
That's the Derek
people,
Sivers thing.
I love it. people started to move. And then I just started putting microphones in people's face and saying, Why'd you vote that way? They're like, what? First one was a little hard, but it made it easier for the second one. And that event, however long that was, 45 minutes or so that we went back and forth, you know, people still remind me of that over these years of that started to change things. It started to break people down. Yes, they were fearful, but if they had to come up and stand maybe even their seat, I don't think they ever would have done, you know, or said what they said.
So
So
essentially, you made it safe.
yes. Yeah. Created the opportunity, made it safe. Asked the question. Nobody had ever asked. Nobody had ever, you know, nobody really asked the customers what they thought. You know,
Which is
they
so
just
weird to
showed up with
me.
expecting what they wanted to hear. And they're like, we can't ask them. Well, sure we can. Why can't we?
Well,
So,
not only you should ask them.
yes.
I mean,
That
that's
became a
like,
lot
to
of
me,
my
that's like having
thinking.
a that's like having an ice cream stand where customers come up and you just hand everybody a vanilla cone and say, that's what you get.
That's what you get.
Instead of, what do you want? You
Yeah.
know? Do you want sprinkles? Do you want this? Do
I
you want
heard
some
that
more?
many times. It's like we can't ask them what they want. They might tell us.
Oh
Exactly.
my God.
We want
Then we
them to
might
tell us.
have to actually provide for their needs. That would be awful. Yeah. Well, I really, I mean, this is really thought-provoking. I mean, this, you said people about vulnerability, and then you said people are fearful of saying what they think. That's kind of a spooky thought. I mean, is that too much micromanagement? Is it, I mean, what's behind that? What's causing people to sit back, go in the office, sit down and say, I can't say what I think?
I think that is definitely, I don't think all organizations are that way, but there's been many that I've worked for over the years that just have this bureaucratic nature to them, where there's a hierarchy, there's a, you know, there's a way that we have either, whether it's probably just unspoken that you don't do these things in the workplace. You don't talk about these things, and you certainly don't ask or have opinions or you know, just open the door for other people to talk. And I don't know where that came from, but wherever many people pick it up and just continue it. And I just decided that that's not what I wanted in the workplace that I worked, and I was going to be the one to ask the questions. I'm known for often asking, well, why do we do it that way? Do we have to do it that way? And people looking at me like, well, I guess we don't. Really? Like we I guess we don't.
You're
And nobody
fortunate.
ever asked the question.
You're fortunate because I've worked in organizations where you say, do we have to do it that way? And they say, yes.
Yes.
And
So, Lisa, I have a question for you. If someone's watching this, see, I call someone like you a rumpus maker. You're there to stir things up and get people on their feet, and So if they watch this conversation and say, yeah, maybe that works for her, but that would never work for me. Is there like a starter assignment you could give someone like that so that they can edge a little closer to doing those kinds of things in their life? A bit of advice, a word of counsel or encouragement?
Well, the first word of encouragement through this is you can be a troublemaker, but that doesn't mean you have to like create trouble. It sounds funny. You don't have to, you don't have to do it in an aggressive way. You don't have to do it in a disrespectful way. And I think that's some feedback that I've re received at different points of, even though my thinking may be ahead or advanced and kind of let's just say I'm trying to roll out a new initiative or whatever it is. So I'm kind of doing the change management thing, but you don't have to push people to in or look down for them for not getting it right away. I mean, I've learned to what's the most effective way is to shift and to meet them where they are and to coach them through it, kind of figure out what's holding them back and what's challenging them. So that would be my first thoughts on advice around this is just see people where they are, meet them where they are. And if if you want to start to do some of this stuff yourself, just pick something small and throw it out there, raise the questions, see what happens. Also, if you're not in an environment that supports this, maybe it's not the right place for you. I was connecting with a friend recently who I think she had her own answers already. So I wasn't telling her anything she had not already kind of thought through herself, but she's like, I think it may be time for me to start looking for, another opportunity. And so let's talk about that. What are you doing? What do you enjoy about it? What do you not enjoy about it? And she got to her own answer by saying, well, when I come with ideas, they always shoot me down, or they change it the next day, or they, I don't feel like I can ever really, create change or move things forward. And it just was making her feel like she wasn't worthy or, respected in any kind of way. So we talked about different ways to maybe address that, but also maybe it's time that culture's not going to support it for her there. Maybe it is time to go on to something else.
So I have one, maybe two questions, but one for sure. And this feeds right off of what we've been talking about here the last couple of minutes. If somebody came to you and said, oh, I need your advice. What's something I can do to be more purposefully human in my everyday life? What's like one key thing that I could do to just be more
Yeah, I think I wrote something about this recently in a blog. Start with yourself, like literally start with your own self, like be human to yourself first. Like, do you
human?
have to be as busy as you're being? What can you do to take care of yourself to stop, to be present, to go take a walk, to eat a healthy lunch, whatever it is, to be more human to yourself. It's always that putting on your mask first before you put on someone else's. So I would say start there.
That's now I
I love
we've
that.
had in all the guests we've had, I've not heard that. Be more human to yourself.
Well, there are so
Absolutely.
many implications of that. One that came to mind, in addition to putting your own mask on first, is you get you talked about the muscle before, but you get to work out that muscle because by being more human to yourself, your soul, your heart, your spirit understands what it means to be human. Whereas we all know far too many people that, like, they work too hard, they run too hard, they're unkind to themselves, they may even be destructive to themselves, it's asking a lot of someone like that to turn around and then treat others in a more human way, isn't it? I mean,
Right.
first they have to get their act together, and then, oh, is that what that feels like? You both know I moderate a lot of groups, and I was in one a couple of weeks ago, and somebody said, "Okay, Jerry, how are you doing?" And I literally, for a second, I said, "No one ever asks me, thank you. So let me give you the summary, and I have to tell you, I felt great as a result of that. But it is true, no one ever asks the moderator how they're doing." So to your point, Lisa, I got, a dose of my own medicine, and I got to experience what it's like for someone to say, "So what's going on with you?" And it felt good. So I like that. Take care of yourself first.
Well, it's funny, you think about the mask on the plane thing, and there's a couple of things that come from that. One, some people think that that means you're selfish, and then there are some people that say, I don't, I don't want to be that person. And I would say, well, it's not selfish. Because you're doing it so that you can then help other people.
That's right.
If you don't put the mask on, you might succumb to, falling over because you can't breathe. As opposed
Yep.
to, no, put it on first, and then you can help all the people around you. And I think that that's the value in taking care of yourself. And I don't think it means taking care of yourself to the point where you no longer care about anyone else. That's not it at all. It's take care of yourself so that you can take care of others. You can be more human with other people. And I think that's it's important to note that, in all of this. I'm going to ask you one last question. And this is a little difficult question, I think. But I'll be interested to hear what you say. What's something that you see that is And it's something maybe you see regularly, or something that's just kind of a normal part of our daily existence that is purposefully inhuman. And we've all kind of just, we see it all the time when we just have accepted it, but it should be changed. What's something that you, is there something that you can think of that's in that realm? It can be little. It doesn't have to be big.
I probably would. I probably would go to. I'd probably go big. So this because this is definitely not small, but because I have family members that have some mental health challenges and mental health illness. And I see the way the stigma that surrounds it. It's just the most inhumane thing I think we do as a society is not see, even if it's the all the way from the person in your family that's struggling to the homeless person on the street to whatever it is, I'm not saying you need to take all of these people and be responsible for them, but see past the illness and see them as a person and see I don't know. I don't exactly have a solution for it other than it doesn't mean we can't greet them or say hello or just do simple things to understand that they are humans with struggles and challenges, and theirs just happens to be one that you can see versus,
Yeah, that's great.
maybe what a lot of people have that are buried.
That's great. Yeah, because they have names.
They have names.
They had family. I mean that, well, that's really, I'm almost tearing up here, Lisa, because, in life, if you don't stop, like you're suggesting, and do what you suggested. People with one form or another of mental illness just like go by. I can't relate to this personally, but I can't imagine that it doesn't affect their self-care too. Like, oh, here I am dealing with whatever. Schizophrenia or whatever, and people just walk by like I'm a tree. Or even people that I would think should be looking out for me, like my care team or what have you. Boy, that's just so that relates to Neil's iceberg theorem. You see a person and it's not somebody you know, so you might be inclined to walk by, but a smile, a nod, good morning, just some form of human affirmation
Compassion.
is well, if not
Compassion. Exactly.
like Lisa said, I see you.
Right. Well, I wrote this down when as you were talking. I wrote down, see past the stigma or the label and see the person.
That's right.
And we do put a lot of labels. We see, oh, they're crazy, and they're crazy, and you shuffle the kids off across the other side of the street,
That's right.
right?
Yeah.
And we do that figuratively or we do it literally, and I think it's important to do that. A really good lesson and something that we got to have you back so we can like dig into that. So
It's big. It's big.
we've unfortunately run the to the end of our time. So
Lisa, part two.
yeah, we'll do Lisa part two. Lisa, thank you so much for being with us. You've given
Oh,
us a lot
thank
of
you.
lessons here and you are a refreshing, just beautiful person. So thank you so much for being with us and sharing with us and we'll see
Thank
you
you
on the
both.
next on Lisa number two.
Keep doing the good work.
You
Great
as
to see
well.
you both.
You as
Bye-bye.
well. Take care.
Bye,
Thanks.
Lisa. So, Jerry, she was a thanks for bringing her to us. Thanks for inviting
My
her to be
pleasure.
with us.
She is a remarkable human who, in her own way, has struggled with being different. I would argue in very positive, human-centered ways. But as we talked about when we were talking to Lisa, business isn't always kind to people taking time to be human. Can create barriers, norms and standards that sort of excuse that from the conversation, and as a result make workplaces less human. I was very happy to see that she picked up on the double entendre in the Purposefully Human name,
Yeah.
because that was not an accident. We did mean both interpretations when we named it. It has the purpose part, but also the fully human part. That was good to see. But yes, she doesn't disappoint.
Well, I got a couple of points here, and then we'll let people go and we'll shuffle off to whatever else we got to do. But the idea of being more human to yourself is really, it's tough for me. I'll be very honest. It's easy to look at yourself in the mirror and give yourself a hard time. That's really easy. It's much harder to look in the mirror and say, you're all right. And to cut yourself some slack and give yourself a break, which you'd give to probably all of your friends, but you don't do it to yourself, And we treat ourselves in very inhumane ways. And that's a big lesson. And I'm gonna, I think I'm gonna take that, be more human to yourself, and stick it on my bathroom mirror,
For sure.
The other one was what she said at the end, when she said, and I wrote down, see past the stigma or the label and see the person. I know that's something I try to do, but I have difficulty with it. With certain, I don't know whether to call them disabilities. Maybe it's just certain disabilities or things that are just unnerving. There's a guy that I've had to deal with recently, or within the last year or so, who has schizophrenia, and it's difficult. It's really difficult, and it can be very frustrating. And I have to consciously tell myself, see past the label, see past that label, see him as a person who has a challenge, a big challenge, a challenge I don't have. And not think that that challenge puts him in second chair. He can still be first chair in something, in whatever he does.
Well, that's a great point. And the thought that you look past the surface, because none of us know how our intervention is received. I used to hang out a lot at this one bookstore back east, and there was a young man that worked there that was, he lived in a group home for people on the autism spectrum. Highly functional. I mean, they had him organize the magazine section, and that section was locked down to perfection because he worked hard. He worked hard, he knew what his charge was and what have you. But if you went up and you said hi, he didn't know his answer. I guess he left for a while and then he came back. And all these times I said hi, and I didn't get a reaction. And then he said, "Oh, hi. It's good to see you again." Just out of the blue, after all these times of not acknowledging that I was saying hi. And I thought, well, I have no idea how what I did landed with him, because I can't be inside of him. But somewhere in there, something landed. So I'm staying in an extended stay property right now, and there are several people here that are also here for medical reasons. I don't know what they are, but you take one look at them and you can realize they're not 100% able-bodied. They know it. They know they're not. They know they're in a wheelchair and what have you, but that doesn't mean you can't say hi, or you can't pet their dog, or and it'll be remembered. You just have to believe that it will be remembered, or it will land in some way, and that becomes purposefully human, as opposed to just, hustling past that person because you don't like people in wheelchairs or what have you. So to me, that really says a lot about what we're about, and purposefully human. And I think Lisa did a great job of highlighting
She
some
did.
really
She was
important concepts. It's
really
funny, she
good.
started out by saying, I don't really have a toolkit per se. And then over the course of 45 minutes,
She gave us a toolkit.
she gave us a toolkit.
We got the toolkit out of her. All right. Well, we're right here, I think roughly at the hour. And I thank you, Jerry. Thanks again. Another great hour with another great guest, and I
Yes,
learned some things, and I really appreciate it. So with
and
that, I'm
thank
gonna
you
challenge everybody.
for.
I'm gonna challenge everybody who's listening or watching to check us out at purposefullyhuman.com and to go to LinkedIn and get involved. So
And thank you for your hosting duties, as always. You have skills that I can only imagine having.
no, well, we'll see. Anyway, thanks, Jerry. Talk to you soon.
All
Bye,
right.
everybody.
Take care.